One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
Everywhere we hear Monday night football's going down.
We're in the building, put it that way.
We're all over.
We are the main attraction. And if you want to chime in, because we're going to get deep into some of the topics that is taking over sports right now here in America. When you talk about sports, you're talking about life, life, and more life. You can call us at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. If you want to talk about and chime in with myself and in my guests, if you want to talk about the subjects and the topics that we're going to have banging here on the Tony Sands Show, call us and talk it. But Kelsey, let's get into it. Let's talk.
Get into it, baby.
Racism. Racism is going on here in South Florida like no other. It is going on big time.
Yeah. Yes.
In South Florida. And when I say big time at its best.
In athletics.
It is going on. Kelsey, it is, because it is what it is here on the Tony Sands Show. But before we get into these topics, and before we dig in to the topics here on the Tony Sands Show, me and my main man is going to talk about the topics, what's going on. And that's at Missouri. The University of Missouri is having problems at their best. They're having deep, deep problems at their best.
Yes.
When it comes to their athletes, their student body, everybody that is having problems. But let's get into deep into that conversation, Kelsey.
Yes, where we have the University of Missouri, all kind of controversy going on. You have the president today, as of around lunchtime, resigning and stepping down because of
the pressure that was put on.
A lot of pressure.
Not only the athlete, the student body that is going on deep in sports today. It is big, but we're going to go to a commercial break. We're going to come back, and as we leave out, we're going to leave out with Selma.
Playback. Playback.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
To the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become.
Oh, we're back here on the Tony Sands Show live at Tilt the Kilt. Kelsey, as we left off, we talked about what is going on at the University of Missouri. And as you speak to you, the president of the university, Tim Wolf, said in his letter of address today that he resigns immediately, effectively, today. And what brought about this situation, Kelsey, is the situation of racism, a lot of unfair treatment on their campus, brought on a lot and spurred on a lot of this from a standpoint of justice and equality for everyone, on the campus.
Yeah, not only the athletes, but the student body as well. And many times we just look at things as being okay, all sports and everything, but we forget about the common student. And in this situation, it was the common students kind of having an outcry for, you know, injustice that was occurring on campus.
A major outcry.
Major outcry. Yeah. And Tony, this had went on for months, where the president, Tim Wolf, had basically, we can say he dropped the ball. He failed to respond in a timely manner to some of the concerns that you had the minority students going through on campus. And now you have a swell.
We're back here on the Tony Sands Show talking about topics NCAA, things going on at the University of Missouri. We got to find out and get to the bottom of what's going on at the University of Missouri with Tim Wolf resigning at the University of Missouri, despite a lot of racial tension, inequality for all students. Because
right.
if you look at the protest, it was not only blacks and white, all nationalities were there showing their support for this cause. But then what I think kicked it off, and as Michael Sam said, what changed the whole dynamics of this, because it was only one person in two tents
mm-hmm.
that kicked this thing mm-hmm. off, but it didn't take wheels and start rolling until the football team decided that they would not play, and get involved with the situation. They would get involved with the situation. But in that instance, some of the football players are still split on where they want to be at.
Yeah, and with all of those things happening, you would think that, okay, it would be enough organizations and groups that would respond to that on campus.
You think?
But it wasn't.
You would think it would.
All of a sudden, the football team gets involved, and it's
involved.
Media, so media, everything.
ESPN, it's been the talk of talk show.
Photos everybody. And all.
And when I say photos, we saw some of the photos. But not only, let's dig into it now. A lot of mm-hmm. people are covering it up. Not only is Missouri having these problems.
Happening on other campuses. You know.
Alabama. This is happening on the University of Alabama campus with this last game. Last Alabama-LSU game, which is haven't been talked about, haven't been brought up for the simple fact, I guess, Alabama know how to what?
Cover it up. Cover
keep
it up.
Now, and if you want to get
low.
The article, if you want to go to the find the article to this, you can go to CBSSports.com and look at Alabama appalled at fans with their offensive. And you can pull this whole thing up, and it gets into what I mean, some of the language that some of the frat houses use and put out when it says finish what Katrina started.
Yeah,
and
they were saying it to the LSU players.
When I hear that, when it says finish, and everybody know what happened with this situation with Katrina. But why did they use the word Katrina? Because of what? LSU's running back.
And
where he was from.
Right.
And you use that word. When I hear that, now I think that's taking, and then they put a nice Alabama A in it where it says start.
Started.
You use the Alabama
came from us. It came from us.
I mean, letting you know that we are true Alabamians here mm-hmm. in Alabama. And not, let me tell you something. And I know that to be true, personally, mm-hmm. from a standpoint, when I was a freshman in college, we had to go play Auburn, Alabama. Now, it wasn't Alabama. We had to go play Auburn in Alabama.
Right.
Another
big program. It's still another big program
that time,
in
it
Alabama.
It was a huge program. That was during the 80s. 1988 to be exact, and my wife had just had my son, and my dad and his girlfriend drove up to Auburn to watch me play as a freshman. It was the first freshman game I was going to play in. I wasn't redshirted, and as my wife and I were walking down to get to the stadium, guys in trucks, Confederate flags, throwed out the N-word a lot to them as they walked. So now you imagine, you're not in Florida, but we know of racism and how strong this thing can go. And you're walking down the walkway, and all of a sudden
you
hear the N-word. Mm-hmm. Get out of town, N, and you got Confederate flags. And from what we know and from what we've seen on movies and things of that nature, when we hear that word, we've known things to happen. So
they feel
so bad. Guess what? They felt so uncomfortable that they didn't even come to the game. They turned around, got in their vehicles, and they went back home, back to the hotel, to try to hope that they could sleep well and go to and get up in the morning and get out of there. So I called them saying, you know, because I'm after the game, and I'm wondering, where are you?
And you didn't see anybody.
And I didn't see anybody. Where are you? And when they explained what happened to me, I understood clearly. And I said, here we are in 1988, and it's still going on. And now here we are in 2015, and it's still going on. And like I said, it clearly states it. And people, I would advise you to go to CBSSports.com and look at the
signs.
You'll
see the photograph.
The photographs tell you. And you know, University of Alabama put out several follow-ups, tweets, and things like that that they tweeted out, and they went so far as to some of them saying, you know, that we realize that today's game is big, but we have been here before, that they've been here before, and I guess they're saying that we don't need none of this going on. We don't need any of this going on, for the simple fact is that this is just a football game. But when you use things like finish what Katrina started, you have taken football to life.
Yeah.
And we tend to use football to guide life, because football tends to gather us up. If you look at
Brings us together.
Going on,
yeah.
They looked at the brighter side of this thing from the standpoint of Katrina, once the Superdome got rebuilt, how it brought that community together.
And the New Orleans Saints everything, their pro team brought them together.
Not how this tears it completely down. And I think that's what this is. It is showing more openly on college campus. And like I told you, because I had a chance to experience this again at the University of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
A young lady, black female, goes to deliver a pizza to a frat house. They was having a party, and all of a sudden, you know, probably about 110 pounds. Now, can you imagine you're about 5'4", 5'3", 110 pounds. You're kind of thin, kind of small. And they pushes her down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
She falls, and while she is on the ground, the frat house laughs. So the University of Kansas had their own racist problem on their campus that they had to deal with. And they, at that time, it wasn't the social media thing, but did we as the football players stand up? You better believe it. As soon as we got the word, because we knew football and basketball. Now, in this case, football and basketball stood hand to hand because we was in the same dorm. So once the word got out, we made sure that the word got out everywhere, and we stood hand in hand.
Y'all stood together.
Hey, basketball is big at the University of Kansas. Technically, when it comes to the two sports, they have more power than
the football
department. But I was a guy, so that's when they came to me first, because I was that, you know, football guy that compared up to the basketball. So we all went up there and we wanted answers. We wanted answers by the University of Kansas Police Department, because we felt that this had some racial.
Yeah, she was treated unfairly.
Now, and I'm gonna get into it, you know, once we bring on the Ryan Bartow. I'm gonna get into Ryan Bartow and ask him, what do he think about it? Well, how do he see this as possibly being something that may hurt recruiting?
That may hurt kids and parents wanting to send their kids there to these universities. I mean, you may not say as much in the whole scope of Missouri, receiving Florida players going up there, but you're talking about Alabama. You're talking about a team right now that's number two.
That's why Alabama made sure that they came out and rebuttaled.
And they quickly responded. They, you know,
hey, listen, they want to make sure that this is not something that we allow here on the University of Alabama campus. It's not something that we condone. This is not what we're about. It is not what we are about as Alabamians. This is, it's mixed emotions. Just like even in Missouri. Missouri, Missouri and Kansas is the oldest rivalry west of the Mississippi, because they considered it as that slave and free state, and they would battle. And that's why they call it one of the oldest rivalries west of the Mississippi. But now, when we get into that and we talk about it and we hype on it, man, here we are in 2015, and kids still have to do what they got to do to express their views. But I like what they did.
They did
it peacefully.
They did.
They didn't do it with any violence or anything was like that. They knew their football power would prevail in this case. And in this situation, it prevailed, because directly. It didn't take months for this to happen. It took days for this to happen.
Yeah, days. And I would say over a week.
And he had to, hey, listen, I resign. I love it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to see if my producer have the soundtrack to the resignation. If he have it, we're going to see if he have the soundtrack to the resignation to make it clear. So our listening guys can hear exactly what was being stated by Mr. Tom Wolf, because he clearly
And this stuff started over since November 2nd, and they had been, you know, protesting.
Yes, clearly.
But it was a number of things, like you had mentioned earlier, that had taken place on the campus. So, you know, as you'll hear, fans, you'll hear the president, Tim Wolf, in his resignation, where he spoke to media members about resigning. And like I said, it was a number of things that had gone on between Confederate flags being driven by
major
groups,
flags.
Feces being spread out and making swastikas on the bathroom dormitories, you know, all type of things in that particular nature. So you're talking about, you know, many things that had gone on here.
Major incidents that and tell me, this is something that just to me, and when I heard that, I heard how he said it should have been dealt with then, it should have been dealt with then, and it wasn't dealt with then, and it wasn't from a standpoint of not being completely taken care of.
Yeah.
And I have a problem with that.
And they said that the students during a homecoming surrounded the car, and then once they surrounded the car during the homecoming, the president did not get out of the car. So he did not respond to what the students were trying to tell him
this incident. And so, now with him not doing that, it brought us to this situation here on this day, to where you could tell, like you say, he was born in Columbia. He was born there, and this is what happened. But here we go back at this point again.
Right.
And we are in this situation again that this can't, it can't be. And we're going to go to a commercial break, and then we're going to come back with my main man, Mr. Bibbs, as we dig into Greg Harding and the Dallas Cowboys and Dez Bryant.
Again, thanks for coming in. As I said earlier, and I'm repeating myself so that Curator Stewart can help me, I'm resigning as president of the University of Missouri system. My motivation in making this decision comes from love. I love MU, Columbia, where I grew up, the state of Missouri. I have thought and prayed about this decision. It's the right thing to do. The response to this announcement, I'm sure, ranges from joy for some to anger to others, and that's why we're here today. So let me speak to why this is so important at this time. To our students, from concerned students 1950 to our grad students, the football players and other students, the frustration and anger that I see is clear, real, and I don't doubt it for a second. To the faculty and staff who have expressed their anger, their frustration, it too is real. To my friends and my supporters that have been so gracious and have sent so many emails and texts and calls of support, I understand that you might be frustrated as well. So the question really is why did we get to this very difficult situation? It is my belief we stopped listening to each other. We didn't respond or react. We got frustrated with each other, and we forced individuals like Jonathan Butler to take immediate action or unusual steps to effect change. This is not, I repeat, not the way change should come about. Change comes from listening, learning, caring, and conversation. And we have to respect each other enough to stop yelling at each other and start listening and quit intimidating each other through either our role or whatever means that we decide to use. Unfortunately, this has not happened. And that is why I stand before you today, and I take full responsibility for this frustration, and I take full responsibility for the inaction that has occurred. I'd ask everybody, from students to faculty, staff, to my friends, everybody, use my resignation to heal and start talking again, to make the changes necessary, and let's focus on changing what we can change today and in the future, not what we can't change, which is what happened in the past. I truly love everybody here in the great institution, and my decision to resign comes out of love, not hate. I'd like to read some scripture that's given me strength. I hope it provides you with some strength as well as we think about what's next. I have to also give credit to my daughter for reminding me of the scripture. Psalm 46:1. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. We need to use my resignation. Please, please use this resignation to heal, not to hate. And let's move forward together for a brighter tomorrow. God bless all of you, and I thank you for this wonderful opportunity to have led the University of Missouri system. Thank you.
Playback.
We're back here on the Tony Sands Show live at Tilt the Kilt on the corner of Las Solas and Andrews Avenue, and we're talking problems in America. But we thought that sports bring problems together, but it appeared sports is the head of the problems that are going on.
Yeah.
But it's making a statement of what's going on in the sports world. It is making that statement strong from a standpoint of inequality. I ain't going to say racism because, as you see, Michael Sam got into this cause. I'm quite sure he got into the cause for his cause.
Right.
So I'm just going to use the word inequality because it was all, you know, facets of race sitting out there in this thing. But we understand that it was the black football players that stood up to this inequality that brought light on this inequality at the University of Missouri.
Yeah, but brought then, major light to
in
it.
Light of that, I think they looked at and said, when they looked at Northwestern, and Northwestern was trying to make a statement, but they was trying to do it through politics.
What I mean politically correct way.
Yeah, they went ahead and said, you know what, we're going to try to form a union that speaks for us, but found out later that they couldn't form that union, so they had to back away, so they didn't have no power.
Yeah.
But these young men realized and said, you know what, we're going to use our voices as a means to bring an end to what is going on. We know money kills you.
It's going to hurt you. Yeah.
It's going to hurt you.
When you're talking about major colleges.
Clearly.
Killing their revenue and a major sport like football. Not like if it was maybe the boys baseball team or the boys soccer team or something like that.
Money in those
sports. There's not enough
they
money.
They went to the sports that's a $1 billion industry every year to make their calls, and they went to that big time to make their statement.
And that was Jonathan Butler, who was a student there at Missouri, and a graduate student who also is head of the student government that went and spoke to the football team to get them involved.
To get them involved because he knew the power that the football team has. And it was ironic when I looked at the picture how many really truly stood up.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if that many stood up, that means to me, it says to me that this problem has been going on
for a while. Yeah.
Because it's tough to get football players to make that statement, because now they start thinking, do they use this against me and try to pull my scholarship?
Right, right. That's what I would think first, you know.
The majority of athletes do. That's why they don't get out and make this protest. But now, does this bring attention to all of them?
Yeah.
I think it does.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm still here.
I think
it definitely
does.
Let's get off that. But there's other problems.
You guys,
it is going on.
Other problems in sports, where there's other things that go on in sports right now that, you know, on a professional level, we're having some problems now with different things. And that's one of the major things that's popping up now. And with the Dallas Cowboys, and we have a suspected issue there with a player on the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, and that player, we're going to go live to our main man, Mr. Bibbs, that we have on the show. Welcome to the show, Bibbs.
Bibbs, are you there?
Bibbs, are you with us? Well, Bibbs, we're going to hold on to my producer, get Bibbs, and we're going to dive deep into it.
Seems to be having some phone trouble.
Greg Hardy, let's get into the Greg Hardy situation.
Yes.
We know, in light of what took place, the Dallas, you know, he was suspended.
Mr. Bibbs is with us.
Bibbs, you there with a buddy?
Yeah, I'm with y'all. I apologize. I had y'all on mute for a second.
Come on, okay. You can't put the Tony Sands show on mute, buddy. We are live here in Fort Lauderdale, man. Yes, sir.
We are live. Like I said, I apologize for that, man. I had somebody talking to me in the background.
It's okay. Welcome.
You brought up the word apologize. Let's look at what is Jerry Jones doing when it comes to trying to get everybody to see his way with the Greg Hardy situation.
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on with that situation?
Man, to be honest with you, I'm gonna give y'all the straight bottom line answer.
Yes.
Jerry Jones is BSing. Like, that's what he's doing. Jerry Jones paid this man to get out on the field and get to the quarterback.
Exactly.
And that's all he's worried about at this point right now. He knew when he signed Greg Hardy to their 1 year contract that he was gonna take a lot of scrutiny and a lot of backlash from what the incident that Greg Hardy was involved in the recent years. So, you know, he knew that, and the Dallas Cowboys organization knew that. But at the same time, that doesn't make what Greg Hardy was involved in right. Politically, socially, economically, it wasn't right. And right now he's dealing with that. And just like, you know, Brandon Marshall and a couple of other NFL players, when they came out and what's their opinion on Greg Hardy, they don't think that he's learned his lesson. Me personally, I don't think he's learned his lesson also. And honestly, I don't think Jerry Jones thinks he's learned his lesson. But at the end of the day, Jerry Jones is about the money. And that defensive end is going to get to the quarterback for him.
But Bibbs, tell me this. What is the mood like around the Dallas metropolitan area and among Dallas Cowboy fans about this signing? How many saying that they feel he should have signed him? How many feel that he shouldn't have signed him?
Well, right now, I think it's about a 70-30.
70-30 going which way? 70 signing, 30 signing him? Which way?
30% is okay with the fact that you're giving him a second chance and you signed him to your team this year. But you have another 70% in Texas in general, not just Dallas, that Texas poll stating that he shouldn't be signed to the Dallas Cowboys. And that is a bad image for the team in itself. It's a bad image for the NFL in itself. And a lot of people are now voicing their opinions about Greg Hardy. You know what it is? I don't think it's the fact that he made the mistake. Yeah, he made a mistake. Men put their hands on women every day in this society, which is not right. But there also has an opportunity to be forgiven and a second chance, which is what the Dallas Cowboys are doing with Greg Hardy. But at the same time, he doesn't really seem remorseful about the things that he did to that young lady. And the pictures, you know, all of a sudden just surfaced this week, and it just made it even more of an issue because we hadn't seen those images yet. And so now that you see the images, you would assume that this man would come out and be like, you know what, that was a horrible mistake by me. I should have never done that. I need help, you know, and the Dallas Cowboys are doing everything to help me. which has been stated that they have programs set in place for him to help him, but he's not stating that. He's just like, hey, I'm here to play football. I apologize. I'm trying to be a better player, and that's it. I mean, nothing really remorseful, and that's what the fan base and the people in Texas are seeing. And like I said, 70% of those people are not really feeling that signing. And now you got about 30% of them that's okay with it because of what he does for them on the football field.
And I was in the substance abuse field for years, and you go up. It's like an up and down roller coaster. Do we expect this guy to change automatically and flip around? We can't expect that every time. How long and when do everyone say, okay, it is okay, instead of looking at a guy like Jerry Jones and saying, you know, he's giving a guy an opportunity to turn his life around? What is bringing on so much of the controversy? Because I'm quite sure the NFL knew about these pitchers. I'm quite sure Jerry Jones knew about the pitchers at some point and understood the arbitrator said, hey, listen.
I think the controversy is more so has to deal with Greg Hardy and his attitude. His attitude towards the whole situation, like I said, doesn't really seem to be remorseful about it. He doesn't seem to feel sorry.
But now tell me this, do a man have to be remorseful and show it to the public, or can he be remorseful within himself and say, okay, hey, I'm remorseful to myself, so I don't have to deal with the outer appearance of the public and worry about the public, because as long as me and myself have done this, then what more do I got to prove to everyone?
I mean, I honestly believe that he should have to, at some point, show that he's remorseful to the fans, to the people that watch this game of football that we love. You know, like, it's some people out here that have dealt with that situation, and it touches home to them. So I would assume that they would like to see if this man's going to be on national television like he is almost every other week or every week. They would like to see him be remorseful of what he's done. Like, it's women there, like I said, that are in abusive relationships, every day. And they're having these incidents, even some to the point where they're getting, killed by these men. So, I see where they're coming from, men and male and female. So I think that with this image that he's upholding and the team that he plays for, he has to show some type of remorse to the rest of the world.
But now tell me this, Bibbs. We're live here on the Tony Sands Show with our Texas insider, Mr. Bibbs, as he digs into the Dallas Cowboys situation. Let's change gears a little bit. Now, we talked about Greg Hardy, and this is what really spawned on, I think, a lot of the controversy when him and Dez Bryant got into the little skirmish and he pushed the coach on the sideline. But how often do you see this? You see it a lot. You see it a lot in football where a player pushes a coach a lot. I've seen where people like Peyton Manning, them not so much as pushed, but have brushed off their guys. But I never see these guys as saying, they look at them and say they are competitors and they want to win.
Right.
But you look at a guy like Greg Hardy and you said, guess what? This is a guy that should never get the opportunity to play in the NFL again. America is a place of that I thought of giving second chances. At least I thought it would be a place of giving second chances. And I look at Ray Rice and I understand. I know him and his wife went through their thing and he's being very remorseful, but guess what? He's not getting that second opportunity.
Yeah.
He's not getting it.
And honestly, in the Ray Rice situation as opposed to Greg Hardy, they play two different positions. You can find a running back. You can find running backs pretty often in today's NFL.
Yeah, you can.
But
yeah,
you cannot
find those
defensive ends that are able to turn that corner and get to the quarterback like Greg Hardy is able to. And that's why they was able to take such a high risk and a chance on him.
High risk versus reward.
They don't have they don't have those type of players that Greg Hardy did in the league.
They don't come by every day. As you can see, the Giants let you know that.
Wow.
The Giants let you know we're going to play with Jason Paul-Pierre with a club on his hand and get that much performance out of him because we understand defensive lineup.
They need him.
But they're built. You don't think we are breeding athletes to be gladiators? Everybody loves to go see them be violent against each other. Because football is a violent sport. Am I right or wrong?
Right, but not against others.
Exactly.
Definitely.
But I guess we say within the arena is okay.
But once those pictures came out, I think that's what really took it to another level.
But the pictures were all, if we're going so much after Jerry Jones, but do we go, the arbitrator said, I couldn't do anything because this was done under the old arbitration.
Right.
You
correct.
Must be fair in that.
Correct. Correct.
This was done under the old arbitration, not under the new players agreement. Under the new player agreement, they could go for 10 games. They can go for that. But under the old, it only wanted a 4-game suspension. So do you supersede that and say, you know what? Hey, we're going by what we want, what we feel right now. If you start that avalanche, look out, buddy. It could be wrong.
If you're saying if you're Jerry Jones?
Yeah. No, if you're the NFL.
If you're the NFL. No, you can't. You can't. You can't. But if a sponsor, if a Dallas sponsor pulls out, oh, you got a problem then.
I don't see nobody. I really don't see that many people pulling out from the Dallas Cowboys.
No, not that many. Not that many.
With Ray Rice.
Right.
Because they understand the value of that brand. They understand the value of that brand. You understand what I'm saying, Bibbs?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. The brand in itself, it's the number one organization in the NFL. They bring in the most revenue out of all the organizations in the NFL. So they're able to get away with a little bit more than, you know, when let's say a smaller team like Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
Baltimore,
or Jacksonville.
Right.
They wouldn't be able to get away with that. They would have. I think the backlash would be far greater for them. They would have to have probably released this player, you know. Something would have to happen. But with it being the Cowboys, like you said, they're able to get away with a lot of stuff. And that's why a lot of teams and a lot of people don't like the Cowboys. And because of things like that. They hate that the Cowboys are spoiled brat. They're able to get what they want. Because of the money.
Yeah, America's team.
They trickle into
the NFL.
They
love to hate them. They love to hate America's team. But B, let's get into this, because we got about 3 more minutes with you. Tell me this. What was it like bringing Dez back? Was the fans excited in Texas Stadium to see Dez Bryant come back to the field?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've been waiting on Dez. And, you know, people thought that he would be back in 4 weeks, like the injury report said. You know, me, I know that I knew he wouldn't be back that soon. But you saw it last night. He makes a big difference to the offense.
Yes.
The offense
was
able to put up points. He had over 100 yards receiving and a touchdown, you know, and the play that he made, he did score the touchdown, are the plays that Dez Bryant makes. No other receiver on the Cowboys team can make that type of play. So he's needed. He's very much needed on that team. And the fans are super excited about him playing. But the question now is, you lose 6 games in a row. We really doubt that you can win 8 games in a row to even get back in the playoff picture. Now the question is, do you shut Dez down? Or do you shut Romo down for the season and then possibly get a top 5, top 10 draft pick? That's one question I've heard people asking, you know, throughout the whole day today. It's like, okay, do we shut them down? Shut down Dez and Romo to prevent, any further injury to either one of those athletes? Or do we try to play them out?
Like I said, but Dez showed you why he should be back on the field
now. Yeah, I don't agree. I wouldn't agree with shutting Dez down unless he was to have, you know, an injury or some type of, you know, setback when it comes to that foot injury. But if he's able to play, then you let him play.
But he's not all the way healed, and look how dominant he was in that game. So imagine once he's at full go, how explosive he can be.
Another question,
my producer is telling me, bro, it's time to let my Ryan Barto hour take place. Hey, man, listen. You keep digging into that Greg Harden, because, you know, that is going to be topic for weeks to come. And then, you know, they come to South Florida to play the Miami Dolphins, which whatever situation that the Miami Dolphins will that be the first win for both teams in a stretch of game? We'll find out, because my man Bibbs is going to let us know. Will that be the first game that both of them win?
The battle of the sorries.
The battle of the losers. Yeah, that's what it sounds like right now. But we'll see, though. We might get a win against Tampa Bay this week. But I'll check with y'all again next week.
That it is. Hey, B, man, it was nice having you here on the show. This
all
is
right,
my
Bibbs.
Texas insider. He knows the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, y'all have a good one.
You
all
too,
right.
Man. We're going to go to a commercial. We're going to go out with Kendrick Lamar, and then we're coming back with Pinecrest, top receiver in the building. Then we're going to our Ryan Barto Hour. and then we're going north, farther north to St. Andrews here on the Tony Sands Show. Kendrick Lamar. We're back here on the Tony Sands Show, live at Tilt the Kilt. If you want to call in and talk on our, talk with our guests, you want to chime in on some of the topics we've been talking about, racism, inequality that's going on at the University of Missouri. We've been talking about Greg Harding, how the people out in Dallas is feeling about him. But we're here with Pinecrest top receiver, Mr. Austin, the guy that dominated for Pinecrest this year at the wide receiver position. Man, Ryan, welcome to the Tony Sands Show. What's going on, man?
How are you, Jay?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. But tell me this. What type of season? Let our listeners know what type of season you had yourself.
I had about 35 catches, a little over 500 yards, 6 touchdowns. Pretty productive year all around. Went 7-3, lost in our semifinal playoff game. Great season, first year head coach. Very aggressive passing attack. Had over 2,000 yards passing for our team, so had a great year.
Now tell me this, Pinecrest. You know, now you guys play in what is considered the independent league?
Yeah, the FMC conference. Yeah.
Okay, and in that conference, you guys do, is it a, how do you, what you do, a playoff?
So there are 10 teams. We all play each other every week, and then the top 4 teams from our conference make it, and we played Calvary Christian Academy, had a tough loss, 38-26, so, you know, we had a tough game, defense didn't do well, but had a few turnovers, but so it was a tough game, but we've got to move forward.
And let's look at, you know, coming down the line, your season's wrapping up, I'm quite sure you're going to get him. You know, I got a call from one of the guys that runs the private versus public all-star game that called me and inquired about you and what type of person you were. Outside of that, are you getting interest from any other bowl teams?
At the moment, we're working on blasting out some film. Felt like I had a really good season. Felt like I'm going to start getting some interest. Keep working on it.
We got guys working. And what's your GPA? Because we have a lot of our listeners are NCAA guys that's at university. So what's your, a guy like you, what's your GPA? How would you sell yourself when it comes to the business of sports to any coach that is listening to the Tony Sands Show?
My GPA throughout high school has been out around 3.6. So pretty solid, not on the low end, pretty good.
Okay, and you're hearing here, you're talking with Mr. Austin here on the Tony Sands Show, Pinecrest top receiver that is getting the job done. But now, how far, and once you get to college, what are some of the things that you want to study? What do you want to be?
I think I want to study, man. There's so much, you know. I really feel like I have a great grasp on football, and I feel like I could be a coach in the future. But in college, I'm not too sure what I want to do. Something maybe sports marketing, not too sure right now.
And you heard him say sports marketing. That's a great field because you can
really good field.
Enhance in a wide open area. You can do what you want to do. You can get it going. But now let's dig a little bit into what you do during the offseason to prepare you for the season.
Well, I train with you, Coach Sands.
Y'all heard it. You heard it. Yeah, I had to get that out of him.
Man, I was really slow sophomore year. I was slow guy. Still not too fast. That's your receiver. I'll catch everything, but definitely gotten a lot faster. Definitely helped.
Now, we're here on the Tony Sands Show talking about my main man, Austin. Austin, man, hey, it was a pleasure to have you here on the show. Don't leave because we got to take pictures. We like to take pictures with our guests, so don't leave us, man. Hey, listen, you continue to work. We're going to get into some serious more work once your season ends.
Yeah.
Kelsey, let's dig into it.
Yeah.
Let's get back into the sports thing. My man Austin is going to leave us, but hey, don't leave the show because we got to take pictures. Don't go. We want you here on the Tony Sands Show. Let's get into now, as we take this thing deeper and deeper and deeper into the sports
realm. That's high sports issues.
We're coming to
sports
high school
issues.
Football with playoffs and things of that nature and what's going to take place. Let's look at possibly, like I said, we saw St. Thomas. St. Thomas will have a playoff game, but I'm looking for that playoff game with Dwyer.
Right.
Them and Dwyer and how far that's
second going. Round matchup.
Yeah. Single matchup, single what it is. We're talking so much about inequality. We're going to go to a quick 2-minute commercial break. Bring my main man, Ryan Bartow, back to the show, and we're going to dip into it. That's Selma, and we're going to dig into it. About a 2-minute break because it takes me that long to get him cranked up, ready to go. He's going to talk to us about a lot of topics that is going on throughout
recruiting,
high school, college, etc. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
One day when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day when the war is won, we will be sure.
To the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against. Yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh, now the war is not over, victory isn't won, but we'll fight on to the finish, and then when it's all done, we'll cry glory, oh glory.
We're back here on the Tony Sands Show. This is the Ryan Bartow Hour of the show. My main man, Ryan Bartow, 24/7 Sports CBS. When it comes to recruiting, there's no one greater than my man, Ryan Bartow. Like I told you, 24/7 stands for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That means there's no rest for the Bartow man. Ryan, man, welcome to the Tony Sands Show again.
Always good to be here. It's good to be in Lottie for a few more days. On Thursday morning, I'll jet out to beautiful Southern California, hit up to be out there for about a week, go about 33 schools out there, but you know, that's my second favorite place in the country, Paradise B. It's QB heaven. You can get your whole team there. You can find your receivers, your DNs, your offensive tackles there. So I always look forward to that. I schedule that one last in the fall because that's a little treat for everybody involved.
But, Ryan, you talk about receivers. Now, let's dig in here. We're here in South Florida. Let's dig into your top five, who you think are the top receivers here.
And this is just from Palm Beach down. And right now, honestly, there's 29 guys that have D1 offers just this cycle in 2016. There's some good ones that aren't even my top five, like a Darnell Solomon from Miami Central that's probably going to go to NC State.
Correct.
One of my favorites, Keyshawn, only the good Pi Young from Miami Senior High School, who might play cornerback. He's an athlete. You got to like Freddie Pinder, a 6'5 receiver out of Miami Southridge. But getting into my top five, number five would be Josh Hammond from Hollandale. He's a Florida commit. He's an Under Armour All-American high character kid, smart kid, and has had a real productive season for Damian Jones in Hollandale. Number four is a guy with huge upside, Brandon Johnson over at American Heritage. He's 6'3", 177, ran a 4.57 at LSU camp. His dad, you're real familiar with, Charles Johnson, that played catcher for the Marlins all those years. So a lot of upside. All his stuff in terms of, well, and that's the same with all these guys, but especially with him, that's why he's ranked as a four-star guy. It's not because he has great high school stats. It's because we know his DNA. We know his ball skills. We know his cousin, Chad Johnson, that played for the Bengals.
Correct.
All his best football is 3-4 years down the road, maybe even further. So a lot of upside there. Number three best receiver down in South Florida just this cycle, Amon Richards. He's out of Wellington and West Palm Beach. We have him as an Army All-American, which means he's one of the best in the country. He's a recent Miami committee. Opened up his recruitment, Auburn, Alabama, Michigan, a few others in the game for Amon Richards. Another high character guy. Has 18 touchdown catches this season. So he's putting on a show. My number two receiver is a human highlight video. A lot of hype around this guy. Sam Bruce, he's maybe 5'7", 5'8", but he's very quick, quicker than fast. Tough kid, productive kid, really good on the 7-on-7. Getting the ball even more as a senior for a powerhouse program in St. Thomas Aquinas. A lot of personality. So he's a guy that's committed to Miami. I expect him to surprise no one and ultimately play for the Gators and his best friend, Jordan Scarlett, who's up there. My top receiver this cycle, us at 24/7 Sports have him as the number two receiver in the country. Again, huge upside. Coconut Creek's Benjamin Victor. This guy is 6'5", 175. He can beat you deep. He can take the short hook, make a guy miss and go long. Runs 4-4 all day. When you see him play, all you think of is just huge upside.
Yeah. But now listen, we broke down the top five.
I see somebody missing
now,
in that
wait
list.
Wait a minute. Hold on. On this list, and we know the guy that came into this season as a highly rated guy coming, you know, Caven.
Yeah. Ridley. He didn't make that. Under Armour All-American.
How did he not make that list?
He would be honorable mention. And
wait a minute. How does he not? Honorable mention, he does not make that list.
Well, you guys wake up at 4 a.m. You guys go to 350 schools a year. Then you come to my house, and then maybe you can answer this stuff. There's three things I know well, and that's one of them.
That's what you do. You pick you guys. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I mean, obviously, you're going to question the 4.7 speed. Obviously, there's academic concerns, red flags off the field. Okay. So there's a lot that goes into that.
So now, tell me this. We talk about all these guys. When I look at all these guys, I think straight of nothing but the word S-P-E-E-D, speed.
What I think of all these guys and probably 20 others we didn't mention is upside.
Okay.
All these guys lifting, eating, speed development, all that is in front of them.
I can understand that. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this, though. With him being in the offense like Deerfield, has that hurt him going in because there are so many other receivers that they can get the ball to versus when he was at Monarch and he was pretty much the featured guy?
I just think those other five have more upside. It's like saying, what's the hottest blonde when you walk into an establishment like this? Comparing the receivers in South Florida is like comparing raspberries to strawberries.
Now tell me, your job has got to be a hard job because you see so much talent.
Yeah.
Now, when you're looking at all this talent, and you talked about DNA, you talked about academics, how much does that go into rating and ranking these guys?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. Offers, what these major college coaches are telling you in terms of their evaluations, the type of system these guys are going to go to. Are they going to get the ball there?
Right.
Are they going to go to an Alabama that might only throw the ball 10, 15 times?
Correct.
Or are they going to go to a wide-open offense like a Baylor that's going to throw the ball? I mean, we saw the other night Coleman has 20 touchdown catches already this season. So that's part of it. Also, what the high school coach is telling you in terms of the kid's work ethic. Does he love the game of football?
Okay.
I mean, those are a lot of factors that go in.
Because a lot of people, they hear and see the rankings, but they really, truly, I don't think – understand what goes into ranking a player.
And that's just some of it. I think the biggest thing is upside, as well as college offers, as well as getting good evaluations, not only from your high school coach who sees them every day, but also your college contacts. And you put all that in. Plus, at 24/7 Sports, when we rank guys, we're ranking them on what their NFL potential is.
Okay.
Not their college potential.
Okay. Okay.
And you look at when NFL receivers get drafted, a lot of them are over 6 feet.
Correct. Yeah.
And so they're looking for those big, strong, fast guys with ball skills.
Because the DBs are getting big, like the receivers. So you want that big guy that can stretch the field and jump up and use his body to help shield the guy off.
And this was one thing that sometimes drives me nuts, especially down here, but I know a lot of secondary coaches for top 40 programs in the country, and I got a 5'11 guy that can run 4'4 and blanket guys, but they would rather offer the 6'1 or 6'2 corner.
I mean,
just because of length, because of matchups.
Yeah, because when you I look at matchups, and I see it a lot when St. Thomas play guys, because St. Thomas have the big guys outside. They have the Grime, they have the Urban, the big body guys outside.
Yeah.
But I see some of those little. And I train corners, and I train a lot of the corners, and I see a guy that's 5'8". That mixed match is totally to the side of the 6'5 guy, because the 5'8 guy has got to jump even twice as high just to go to the peak height of the guy that's 6'4", 6'3".
And there is a place for those guys. Usually you put them in the slot, are your nickel guys.
Correct.
But you have a guy next year who I absolutely love at Miami Columbus High School named Trajan Bandy.
Uh-huh.
This guy's got legit 305 dog in him, probably 5'9 and a half, but he can vert 38 plus.
Wow.
So if you're trying him on the fade, he can go up and knock it down too. So it's kind of the exception to the norm.
Ryan, you just released an article on 24/7 Sports. You released ours, and it was released, and all of a sudden, bam, it took wings and just flew all across the links of America when it comes to the internet. Blew it up. Mm-hmm. Let's get a little bit into that article, and it was talking about how coaches are looking at a potential coach down at the U.
Okay, well, this morning, it took about 2 hours to edit because that baby took a long time to put together. But when I went through 34 high schools like I do every other week, and I happened to be right the week after Al Golden got fired, that Sunday night, and you hit the road 6 in the morning, and you ask every high school coach from South Dade all the way up to North Palm Beach, what kind of coach should Miami hire? What should be that criteria? And your follow-up question is, give me two or three guys you would think would fit the bill. Who should get an interview? Who should get serious consideration for that? Well, this morning on 24/7 Sports, on the national page, not just the Miami site, we ran the whole results for this. And this baby is probably well over 10,000 views as we speak.
Right.
Needless to say, in the results, out of about the 34 coaches we polled, there was a couple Butch Davis in there. There was some Greg Schiano. There was a little Charlie Strong. You had a couple even curveballs in there with like a Mark Richt. But the trend obviously was Mario Cristobal. He had about 26 of the 34 high school coaches not only singing his praises, basically standing on top of the table and saying, hey, if this guy gets the job, they're going to help that guy with their best recruits down here to send him so they can stay home, play for Miami, and live in paradise.
Listen, and I'm going to tell you something. I was down at University of Miami yesterday because I was at I sponsored this cheerleading team, 9U. Yes, we went down there, as they say, we tore up the mat. You know, in cheerleading language, when you did your thing on the football field, they called the mat their football field. They did their thing. But I had a chance to meet two Miami recruits. And listen, and I pulled them to the side. I can't reveal their names, but I pulled them to the side. And that was the name. I asked them, I said, okay, now, how much have you been really following the coaching thing with who could possibly, and one guy said, hey, I've been following it a big deal because it means a lot to me. Not that it is all be all, but it means a lot to me to know that who could possibly be the guy that's coaching me. And I asked him, I said, well, what do you know about, Butch? What do you know about Greg Schiano? And it took him a while to really come up with something. The only thing, they said Butch, they said, well, he was at North Carolina. But one guy said, I don't know, what is he doing now? And that told me something about when I tell people all the time, you must be relevant in order for guys to follow you.
Yeah.
You got to be relevant. I see it all day when I look at guys that are still relevant after they played versus guys that are not relevant. I remember, you know, I looked at Benny Blaze at the park. I see him a lot, and I have to tell a lot of the kids, do you know who that guy is? And the kids are like, no, who is that? And the first thing I got to bring up, because I can't bring up, he was the guy at the University of Miami when they were dominating, because half these kids don't know nothing about that dominating era.
No.
I have to tell them that that was the guy that was speaking on the 30-30. And they said, now I know what you're talking about. So I have to bring up that in order for them to remember.
To remember.
But then you look at a guy like Michael Irvin, who they're seeing every day on television, they know who he is. But these two guys played during the same era. Benny was drafted, I think Benny was what, the third or the second pick of the 1988 draft. So that, and Michael was the number 11 pick of the 88 draft. But relevance has a lot to do with people's outlook and the way people see people. And like I said, Greg Schiano, they didn't know anything too much about. They didn't even, you know, they couldn't even put him with Rutgers. They just couldn't.
Well, obviously I interviewed probably 80 recruits in that week-long stretch too. And that was the name not only for high school coaches, but most of these recruits, because Cristobal's also recruiting all those guys for Alabama. Yeah. So they talk to him almost every day. So they know the type of person he is, the personality, the energy level. And, I mean, shoot, outside of this story that you're looking at right now, I put up three stories about four-star recruits that said they hope Cristobal's the coach so they can go there.
Now you,
and I'm talking for the next 3 years as well.
And Ryan, tell them what it – my listeners, let them know where they can go in and look at this article.
Yeah, you need to hop on 247sports.com. That's 247sports.com. Right now, it's ranked as the 10th biggest site in the country in terms of traffic for a sports site. And you hop on the national site, you get to see the story. It's called High School Coaches Weighing In on the Miami Job.
Wow.
It's getting huge traffic. Obviously, the best of the best down here in South Florida have weighed in. They've given their take on who they want to be the next boss for the Hurricanes, and it's pretty overwhelming.
And like I said, when you look at this whole thing, you look at some of these coaches are guys that played at the University of Miami.
Yep.
And I'm looking at, in the story, Earl Little is a guy that played at the University of Miami, a guy that, you know, that can do, that's doing a heck of a job.
Yes.
In the coaching. And he clearly comes out and he's looking at, you know, I see Cristobal, that's probably one of the first names that he mentioned.
Yeah, he was real passionate about that. I think that's his choice as well. It is for a lot of former players, a lot of former coaches that coached at Miami, as well as your high school coaches, which I think is the number one most important thing.
Correct.
These are the future. These are the guys that see the recruits. 90% of your recruiting, when you do it well, is going to be in these three counties. These are the guys that you need to have the best rapport with, because they have the talent. They're going to be the ones bringing these kids to campus. They're going to be the ones that you go and try to build the rapport with so they can help you in terms of talent acquisition. So I think more so than any, even, you know, promotions from former players, former coaches or recruits, high school coaches, I think, is the utmost, because they're the stability. They're the ones that always have the talent.
Yeah. Now, Roland Smith at Miami Central, what was his take on this whole thing?
You know, and some of the best stories you get are obviously the ones you can't put
in
print.
Exactly.
Kind of like a Roger Harriott. I think both those guys are very pro Cristobal in this.
Uh-huh.
But those are both programs, too, that get recruited by 20, 30, in the case of St. Thomas, 60 programs. Yes. So you got to kind of walk that company line.
You got to walk that political line,
yes,
as I call it.
At least publicly.
And you know, a lot of people ask me that question because they know how close I am to Michael Irvin, and they know how Michael Irvin's voice rings throughout America when it comes to the University of Miami. And they say, well, what? You know, and I brought him on the show, and I asked him that question, and the one thing he said, well, you know, I got it in Miami. You know, he said, well, pause. I'm in the best interest of the university. And so at that point, he went more political than he went to really naming a guy, because I know he has vested interest for the simple fact that his son will be playing for the university.
Yeah, so he's got to walk in even finer lines.
Yes.
You know how this happens is, okay, that's fine if you see it in a national site like 24/7, and you see public promotion. But when Blake James and the Board of Trustees get that personal phone call, from a former player like the playmaker or a former coach there that won national titles or, you know, one of the big high rollers, the money people.
The money
That's what's really going to carry weight in this decision that's, you know, just about 3 weeks away from going down.
Now, we obviously understand how big this is when it comes to the University of Miami's success in turning the program back around. Now, you talk about a guy like Roger Harry, and you brought his name up in this whole thing, because it's him and whoever that coach is at the University of Miami got to have a great rapport with each other, because he's got to have that ability to trust this guy to send his players down there and tell his players that this is a trustworthy guy.
Yes.
Roger being on the coaching circuit recently, what are some of the things he's saying that he would like to see down at the University of Miami?
I think, one, he wants that new school approach, a guy that is familiar with the area, a guy that's going to do it the right way in terms of representing the university and their goals, their plan, but also a guy that's going to be genuine and trustworthy with these kids, somebody that's been through it before, somebody who's going to be there in terms of the developmental of the player on and off the field. I think he's big on all those things. But if I'm that next coach at the University of Miami, Roger Harriott, Mike Rupp, Kareem Reed, Roland Smith, Aubrey Hill, the list goes on. You just read all of them. I want to be their best friend.
You know, I'm looking
not everybody can be Ryan Bardo and just show up at their school any time of the day and they give a red carpet to all of them.
But that's
the kind of, and I've only been down here 3 years. They got to go and put in that work, help their kids out, be honest, and most of all, you know, be passionate about it. And I think these high school coaches will have a residual effect and they'll give back to you. At least that's how it's worked for me in a, you know, kind of a short period of time.
But everybody lays out the red carpet when they see the word 24/7 sports coming to their campus. But right now, let me tell you something. There's another piece of part to this thing now, too. And you brought it up. You said a championship coach.
Yep.
And when you think about the University of Miami, guys, I know Howard Snellenberger started it, but Jimmy Johnson finished that legacy. And I'm quite sure his voice will weigh into this thing to a big deal. Now, when we look at
the Godfather.
Yep. And when you know it, and you know it, but now, Butch Davis is close with Jimmy Johnson.
Yep.
Have coached under Jimmy Johnson. Not only him, but, you know, it was said that Greg Schiano was seen down there in the Keys. You know, you got to go to the Keys to visit Johnson. Yeah, when you get, you know, my boy up at New England travels down.
Yeah, Belichick.
Belichick goes down to spend time with him. You know, if you got to go to a man like Belichick goes down there, you know, I guess, you know what I'm saying? You know what?
Sacred grounds.
Let me head down to the Keys. Let me take a vacation. Because he built.
Yeah, it's killing two birds with one stone. You're going to paradise and hanging with as good coaches we've ever seen, and especially in terms of talent evaluation. But remember this. Chudzinski and Cristobal were both recruited by Jimmy, so they've known him as well. And he won't be the only one that has a say in this. I think, you know, Alex Rodriguez and the Board of Trustees is going to have a say.
Yes.
I think a lot of the former players, like a Mike Irvin, like a Ray Lewis, you know, those guys are going to have some say in this as well. And they should, because Miami's a unique dynamic. Normally, you would think 95% of the time, you're not looking for input from the former players. But given the location, given the history, given what these players have done, the tradition there, I think in this situation is one of the unique circumstances where you do reach out to the alumni to get their input on that.
Yeah. I mean, and like you said, hey, listen, folks, it's no secret. You know, a lot of people know the way I've been leaning, because I love what the guy would bring to the University of Miami. I love the swag that I know he's going to bring. But he's also, I feel, out of all these guys, is the biggest guy that can bring revenue back to the University of Miami. When I say revenue, I mean bringing the Latino population back to the University of Miami. Well, you got to remember now, in those Orange Bowl days, that Orange Bowl was filled with a lot of Latinos. They like to come. They love the University
of
Miami.
That's the spice on it. That's the Latin spice, the flavor on it.
Because like I say, when they make this decision, I also know that they're going to want to fill that stadium.
Well, I think it's a three-part tier on how you flip it, and I think this is the way for any college football program is broken down in three parts. One, talent acquisition.
Correct.
Recruiting.
Correct.
Two, player development, how you get your players bigger, stronger, and faster while they're on campus. And three is personnel use, how you use that talent in its best position. I think that's the Parcells down to Belichick, down to Urban Meyer kind of formula that's worked, especially with Nick Saban as well. So in terms of Miami, if you want to fill up that stadium, why not make most of the kids on that roster local talent?
Correct.
That's part of your talent acquisition. Yep. When you're doing it right, most of these kids should be local.
Yep.
Two, in player development, that's where you get your alumni back. They're here, down here in Paradise, working in the off season, and you can't put a price on that in terms of working out with the former players and getting bigger, stronger, faster way. Yep. And number three is you're running a Jimmy Johnson 4-3 defense that fits your personnel,
fits
your personnel. Also, the day and age of the pro-style offense has gone by the wayside.
Oh, yeah.
Why not run your Auburn, your Oregon, your tempo offense? Because one, that's what the high schools down here in South Florida are running. Two, all these kids down here are used to that offense. They want to play in something exciting. You're in one of the entertainment capitals of the world. Why not make football fun for these kids? Let them stay home. Let them play in a no-huddle, no-mercy offense that's scoring 40, 50 points a game. Then all of a sudden you got butts in the seat.
Now, tell me this now. You interviewed a lot of coaches. Well, there's one coach that's not a coach, but he's an AD that I know you interviewed. I know it had to be an entertaining interview because that's all George Smith does.
Yeah.
How was George Smith, a guy that done sent players down to the University of Miami, Michael Irvin, Greg Cox, all these guys that he sent down to the University of Miami, what was his take on this thing?
Yeah, and I think Coach Smith is looking big picture. He knows that Miami is not just that football program. Maybe some of the people there maybe don't want that old school swag there.
Correct.
And they're looking more into the future in terms of the medical school. And
correct.
He's got that old school approach, and he knows all the four guys, the major candidates for it.
Very well.
But I think his kind of wish list is the same as almost every other high school coach that I went through. And I think he's wanted that for a while.
Wow. You're talking to my man, Ryan Bartow, 24/7 Sports, Mr. Insider, Mr. 24/7, Mr. Never Stop Working on the Job. Ryan, before we let you go, tell me, you talked about your journey coming up.
Yes.
Paradise in California. What are some of the guys out in California that you're going to look for?
One of the first stops will be on Friday morning, see five-star linebacker Mike Juarez. He's in Torrance North. This guy is out of control. I love the way he plays because he's 6'3", 225. He can line up in the slot. He can come off the edge. He also plays quarterback, and he's a former Southern Cal commit. Uh-huh. He recently opened up after they had the coaching change. Look for UCLA to eventually land him. Alabama recently got a visit from him. Oklahoma's in there as well. But once you grew up in Southern California, it's hard for him to leave.
Anytime I think about linebackers and I think about Southern and I think about California, there's only one name that comes up in my mind, and that's Junior Seau.
No doubt, one of the best ever.
Now, if I'm saying Junior Seau, do he fit? I know he's young,
yeah.
And I don't want to predestine. I'm talking about a
is
guy.
He's a wild child.
Do we have
on the field? He's like that. He's got that big frame, and he comes off the edge, and he'll run guys 30 yards down the field, make tackles. But he's got that kind of mentality,
and
he's got that spirit too. And
as we say in our world, he got that dog.
Yes, that's one of the main things that I say in the evaluation process all the time, especially in South Florida. Does he have that dog in him or not?
Let me tell you something, and I'm gonna tell you guys. And when I brought up the word dog. The stats, I'm bringing up a guy that's coming here on the Tony Sands Show from St. Andrews. But St. Andrews, guys, is in Palm Beach County. I'm going to run off some of the stats of Ryan. He's a sophomore guy. Guy stands 6'2", 225 pounds. And when you look at a guy, we talk of Iron Man football. You're talking about a guy that plays both ways, starting both ways. This guy has 9 touchdowns, 8 rushing, 1 receiving, a safety, 495 yards on the season. But then we flip him because he has to go to defense when the offense is not on the field. Mm-hmm. 60 solo tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 7 sacks, 2 interceptions, 2 block punts, and 1 fumble recovery.
So if I saw all that stuff and I show up at his high school, 6'2", 220 right away you're thinking maybe H-back, but most likely when you look at those stats, you're thinking old school Mike linebacker. You're looking at, one, what's his pro shuttle, what's his academics, and then you go from there, because he's already got the college-ready size. Plus, he's only a sophomore. Plus, geography factors in. He's from South Florida, so you know he's all upside. His best football's in front of him. So you combine all that in, and then you'll see potential offers coming that way.
And see, now, folks, that's why I bought this in, because I wanted to let everybody know how we get into this rating and how you guys go about doing your job. Like you say, you look at these numbers, and he's a sophomore, and the kid is nicely built.
I like that format. That format that Ryan has down. And once he applies it, you can really identify. You know,
it reminds me of a teacher that I used to have who invented a formula for, I think it was algebra or geometry, the Pythagorean theorem. That was my teacher that invented that form.
Uh-huh.
There's a checklist that you go through your mind in terms of upside, size, frame, speed, academics, obviously production, and there's probably a host of six other things. I can know by watching maybe two or three clips of a guy and seeing him in person whether he's a guy or not.
And we're going to make sure that we get 24/7 gets Ryan's huddle link so we can check it out and we can see his potential upside rise up, because as a matter of fact, I think it was a year or two ago they had a big tight end.
Wound up with North Carolina.
Right.
Yes, the big tight end guy. So there are a lot of guys that, you know, sometimes. Now, tell me this. When you look at a guy like this, and sometimes we hear small school, does that play into any of it?
If he can play, they'll come to get him.
That's what the reason why I asked the guy your talent and your expertise is, because some kids feel like, I'm not going to get looked at a small school. But you're telling me if he can play, and that's what I tell guys when they go into the league, if you can play,
they'll find you.
They're coming to find you. They're turning over every stone to make sure that they find that diamond in the rough. And I feel this guy is a diamond in the rough.
Yeah, we've had guys in the past that have been at single A schools. Like, I can remember Daquan Bowers was the number two recruit in the whole country. His school maybe had 200 kids in it total. But he's a five-star DN, 6'5", 270, that ran 4.5 all day. Well, people are going to line up and fight for that.
That's what I'm talking about.
The only thing you question with that is the caliber of competition he's playing every Friday night. He better be dominating that level. And because if not, then you're wondering, oh, wow, how's it going to project?
Now, when you see 60 tackles, that's, you know, 60 tackles in a year. That's a lot of tackles in a year. I look at six tackles for loss.
But I'm looking at the tackles for loss. The seven sacks and two interceptions and two block punts, those numbers pop out. You usually don't see that from a middle linebacker.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that means this guy's flying all over the field. Right, man. Hey, man, it's a pleasure each and every week for you to join the Tony Sands Show. Will you be back in South Florida on Monday?
No, I know you're on the road. When I come in next week, before you have me on the phone, we're going to have to queue up a little California love.
Hey, baby, you said it. That's what
hey,
my
he's
man
he's ready.
Wants.
He's California ready to get
love.
Out there.
California, yeah. Because my man is heading to California. California, look out. My man Ryan Bartow will be touching down.
QB heaven, baby. The best QBs in the country.
And Ryan, make sure you come back with some information on who's going to get that USC job out there.
Yeah, we got
no doubt. I'm going for the straight juice there.
Yes.
Give me that dirt.
Maybe I'll show up with 34 high school coaches and who they want.
That's the list.
I'm quite sure you're probably going to hear that when you get in California. Why you are not giving us the same love you're giving the college high school coaches in South Florida on who they like to be the University of Miami.
Oh, don't worry. It's Paradise B. I'm going to give them a ton of love out there.
You heard it here on the Tony Sands Show. Ryan Bartow say he's going to do the survey on who and what USC is looking at.
What's next for them?
We're talking here. Hey, we're going to head to a commercial break. And you're tuned in to the Tony Sands Show. You're listening to my main man, Ryan Bartow. Ryan will be joining us on the phone next week as he take his journey to California, to the California. Yay. He's going to be in California getting it in, giving us the dirt. USC alum, wait till the article come out on 24/7 Sports and see who.
Who's the next guy?
Your request in your city of your high school coaches, who they are deciding who they would love to communicate with about their young men. Here on the Tony Sands Show, we're going to head to commercial break. Let's pray that public enemy fight the power, because that's what's been going on, fighting the power. all over the place in Missouri, in Alabama. Those athletes are trying to fight the what? The power.
Fight the power.
We're going to a 3-minute break, and then we're coming back with my main man, another Ryan. Ryan must be a common name. Ryan's got to be a common name.
Ahead of the game name.
Head of the game name. So I guess this Ryan is ahead of the game already because he is a sophomore sitting 6'2", 200-something pounds. Six solo tackle. We're into a commercial break, and we're coming back with just that. The head of the game man, Mr. Ryan, here on the Tony Sands Show.
Playback.
Music hit your heart, cause I know you got a soul.
Nothing is this bad.
Listen if you're missing, y'all. Swinging while I'm singing. Hey. Giving what you're getting. Knowing what I'm knowing. While the black band sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling.
We're back here on the Tony Sands Show. As I told you, I was reading off the stats. I mean, when I say stats, read them off to the utmost of a young man. And you heard Ryan Bartos say about the name Ryan.
This may be the up-and-coming superstar.
Superstar.
Diamond in the rough.
Diamond in the rough. When I was reading off your stats to him, right, and I let my viewers were hearing them, and they were hearing, when you hear, like he said, this is what, he looked at your body size, and he said, man, that looks like a middle linebacker, a guy that can dominate the field. And he's only a sophomore, and he's 6'2", 200 pounds. So he looked, he said, that frame can even put on more. He said, because when I look at interceptions, I look at sacks, that's not something that you see a guy, you know, that could possibly be a linebacker doing. So he said, that kid must be dominating the landscape. And he went on that. I got into it, and I asked him this for a reason. Because I asked him, you know, some kids get a little discouraged. They say, well, you know, I'm at a smaller school. I'm not going to get looked at. The first thing that came out of his mouth was, if the kid can play anywhere he goes, the kid can play. If he's a baller, he got that dog in him. He can play regardless of where he at. And that's what I told my listeners, guys, don't get it twisted. If you're a baller and you can play, they'll come and find you.
Yeah, they'll definitely find you.
And everywhere. Let's break it down. Let's break down your thing. And you heard him. As a matter of fact, he is the number one guy on 24/7 sports here in South Florida and the nation. He travels the nation doing things. You can read his article. Go there, and he got right now the biggest going article on 24/7 sports. He is the guy. When they say ranking him, he rank him. Yeah. He rank him from head to toe. But let's get into you now. You remind me of one of those old school Iron Man type of football players. I'm quite sure you probably hear that a lot from older guys. You don't hear that too much from younger guys because younger guys don't know what Iron Man football is.
Yep.
Because guys don't tend to play both sides of the football. They only play either offense or defense. Some people feel like, I'm a guy, he can't handle all that. It's going to wear him down. But when I look at this with your performance, 9 touchdowns on the offensive side of the ball, 1 safety, 495 yards rushing. I'm quite sure you probably got some receiving yards that mom just, you know, didn't put together in that nice packet for you. But 60 solo tackles, man. Explain how one man that plays both sides of the ball is able to get 60 tackles.
Well, first of all, I got to credit our defensive coach, Coach Drew. Uh-huh. He was very beneficial for us this season, and it was very tough at the beginning of the season playing both ways. It was a huge adjustment, but eventually as the season went on, I got used to it, and I started getting better as the season went on.
7 sacks, 2 interceptions. Now, the 2 interceptions, you know, were they pick sixes?
Well, the first one was a pick six, but it got called back by a flag.
Oh man. That doggone referee, I tell you.
Man, I was mad.
That referee, I tell you. I bet you want to say, man, just give me that, please. Because that pick six means a lot. Uh-huh. But we're going to count it in there. Block punts.
Oh, I love blocking punts. That's the best. That's the best feeling, man. Next, it's touchdowns, block punts, are interceptions. All in there. Exactly. It just feels so good when you get that smack on the ball, and then you just chase after it. Yeah,
boom.
Exactly.
Now, so that tells me a lot about you as a player. Now, you're a sophomore.
Yes, sir.
A sophomore that's pretty soon, I guarantee you, after you send this highlight tape off to Ryan Bartow, your stock is going to start rising like my thumb's going up.
Quick. Going thumb straight up.
And that's, it ain't going to go slow. It's going to shoot through the roof because he looked at your body type and he looked at your numbers. And you're only 15 years old. So growing, you have a lot to grow into your body. But now let's talk about how and where. What are some of the schools, if you had your choice, and pretty soon that's what it's going to boil down to, you're going to have your choice. What are some of the schools, and I know you're early, what are some of the schools that you see now that you would possibly see yourself playing at the next level?
Well, the dream school would be Notre Dame.
I've
always been a diehard fan. Since I was little, and
Fighting Irish.
Exactly. And any college that has a good education, a good engineering program, and a good football program, I'll be extremely interested in.
Engineering program. That tells me a lot about a young man.
Yeah, there we go. We got another engineering one.
You would have never heard that word come out my mouth. Engineer? Engineer? Ain't that the guy that tried to train? That's how I would have looked at it. Hey, that's the guy that drives the train, you know, when it comes up and down the track. An engineer, man, that tells me a lot. You got to study a lot.
Yeah, yes, sir. It's St. Andrews is a great school academically and for sports also.
Now, and tell me about this because, you know, your coach is with us, man. And that's got to mean a lot to you when you have your coach to travel with you. And guys, he's traveling a ways to come here on the Tony Sands Show. You're talking with Mr. Ryan, the main man, the Iron Man. From this point on, let me tell you, everybody that comes on my show, and I've brought a lot of guys on my show, I give them a nickname. And then, before I know it, before they get home, they've been done changed their Twitter. I'm calling you Mr. Iron Man. So now I know you just started your Twitter.
Yep.
Because I asked your mom about Twitter. She said, I don't think he has one of those. I don't know if he have one of those. And she said, well, I got to find out how he get that started. Then they got to start up. But now, we're going to change that.
All right.
I want you to go back into your settings and change it to Mr. Iron Man.
All right.
The number one, I call him the number one corner in the country. Changed his, Mr. Mullins changed it. I called him Mr. Shutdown. He changed his Twitter that night to Mr. Shutdown. You know, and he was just, you know, they gave him the award for playing, you know, he's playing in the Army game and they gave him his award. Man, at the rate it's going, because, you know, Ryan Bartow is catching you early, there's a possibility, and coaches here in the audience, coach, there's a possibility that you may be getting ready down the line, 2 years from now, getting ready to have your own jersey ceremony because he started with those guys early, and it was three that he got invites to the Army game.
Yeah.
You're probably, let me see, when
three
I look
from
at
Coconut
it,
Creek.
What I know, if I'm not mistaken, you're probably, if that happens for you, you'll probably be the first guy out of St. Andrews to get that award to have a jersey ceremony.
Well, that would
what
be an
would that
honor.
Mean to you?
That would be an honor. I mean, the school is giving so much to me over the years, and just to be able to pay that back would just be amazing.
Now, let's get into it now. You know, I got the stats on the football field. I want the stats in the classroom because that, as Ryan said, also that weighs into it. What's your – give me your stats.
Well,
I call them stats, but you know, I know y'all call them GPAs, but I'm going to call them stats because we're in the game of football right now.
Classroom stats.
Give me some of that.
Well, I have a 3.8 GPA. 3.8. And I currently take three honors classes.
Okay.
And my favorite classes are chemistry, algebra 2.
Hold on. You said chemistry is your favorite class?
Chemistry, I love chemistry.
Some smart classes.
Biology. I like a biology a lot too.
Wait a minute. Chemistry and biology is his favorite class.
Yeah. Listen, you got a smart Mike linebacker on the field.
and that's what everybody wants. That mind, that yes. Brain. The plate when you
quarterback of the defense.
Yeah, and that's what it is. You know, you able to roam. You make the calls. Do you? Find yourself doing that a lot.
Yes, me and my fellow linebacker Andrew Cirillo make the calls defensively.
I had a chance to meet Andrew last year because I had an opportunity to go to a lot of the game. Now, tell me this, and I know a lot of people probably didn't predict you guys to have the season that you had.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like proving what they call the naysayers wrong?
It was satisfying. We put a lot of hard work in over the summer,
uh-huh.
and once we got that first win, Florida Christian, it was just all settled in, and we were really just really happy. And I would also like to say, we were at a point where we were like 2-3, and we had to win every single game until homecoming to make the championship, and we did that.
Wow. You hear here, St. Andrews made the championship going into it. Now tell me this, though. We talk about so much. What does it take in the offseason? Because people don't realize, to play both ways, what are some of the things that you do during your offseason?
Well, I worked with Tony Sands, and he's been...
I ain't bragging. I'm just saying. I just asked you a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, 5 days a week, I would go 6 in the morning to the weight room, go there for an hour, and then go to the field from 8 to, like, 11, and we would work on speed and agility, and it was the best summer of my life.
Can you imagine? And you heard what he said. This kid, this young man wakes up, so you got to wake up because he's coming from Palm Beach County.
Yeah.
You got to wake up about 5 o'clock. You get to the gym, you work out there to 6 o'clock, and then you leave there, and you got to probably about an hour downtime, if that, 30 minutes at best, and then you're on the field all the way until 11:30 max time. Mm-hmm. You're talking about 5 to 6 hours of your day is spent in your craft. Do you feel that paid off for you in the long run?
It paid off for me very well. I mean, I could not have asked for a better season for me and my teammates. We fought as hard as we could, and I'm just very happy about our season.
Listen, man, hey, you keep working because your upside is coming. It is coming, and you're going to be one of those guys, and probably within this offseason. And that's what you got to do now. We got to make sure that we go to work this offseason because we got to get you ready for what they consider the circuit of the combines and things like that, things of that nature, because they're going to be demanding that of you, and you're going to start hearing your names ring. So it's going to get a little hectic for you as this thing go down the line, come down the line. So you keep working, man. It's a pleasure to have you here on the
It's
Tony
a pleasure
Sands
to be
show,
here.
Bro. Anytime I can have
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We're going to keep it. We're going to follow you. Stay with us. Don't go because you're going to carry us out on this commercial. Listen. We're winding down here, ending the show right. Another two great high school athletes, Austin and Ryan, joining the Tony Sands Show, Pinecrest St. Andrews.
Yes, in the house.
Pinecrest St. Andrews is in the building and enjoying this exciting day with us. Now, what we're going to do, because you are a top guy, coming up, I'm calling you the top guy coming out of Palm Beach, underclassmen coming out of Palm Beach, because that's what's going to happen. Because you're looking at your physique. We're going to make sure that we're going to get you up to about 225.
Yep.
Roaming, moving, exploding. But we're closing out this show. We're going to have here on the Tony Sands Show, because we got you and we got Austin, we're going to have what we call here on the Tony Sands Show. I go to Hawaii and then I come back. But Kelsey's is going to do the show next week. So we're looking at, what's that?
Two or three weeks.
We're going to have here, we're going to have the St. Andrews out.
Oh.
We're going to have you to go back. We're going to have Austin to go back to St. Andrews Pinecrest Hour here on the Tony Sands Show. We're going to have you guys to go back, and we're going to invite your buddies here.
That would be phenomenal.
We're going to invite your buddies here. We're going to give them the love, too, because I know, you know, those guys want to be seen and want to, you know, they want their name recognition. So I'm sending you guys back to your house, to your, what I call your houses, because you guys run these programs.
Okay.
We're going to send you back. We're going to let you guys call it.
Parents and fans. Parents and fans.
You heard it here. We're closing out, my main man. We're closing out the Tony Sands Show here with Ryan, the main man. Hey, listen, you know you in a, you in this kind of place. You know they wear them kilts here. Scottish, you know they wear the kilts right here. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know they wear the kilts. Now, when y'all come back, I'm going to have on a kilt that day in honor of y'all heritage, y'all tradition. I'm going to wear it because I've been saying I'm going to wear it. I'm going to have on my nice skirt when we do St. Andrews.
You can't call it a skirt.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I got to call it a skirt. They told you that.
I know. They keep on telling me, and I keep calling it a skirt. It's not a skirt. We're closing out the Tony Sands
Show. I
better
bring me some extra shorts.
I will be wearing not a skirt, but a what?
A kilt.
I will be wearing a kilt here and tilt the kilt. See you later. Until next week, I'll be calling you from Hawaii. Kelsey will be live here on set. Thank you for listening to what? The Tony Sands Show.
See you next week, fans.
Playback.